We're talking with District 33 State Representative Ben Robbins. Ben, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So there has been a lot on people's minds lately, particularly surrounding Haitians in our area. It's been the topic of conversation for the last several weeks. And let's just start with the facts first, okay? We know that there are Haitian migrants in our area. We know that based on your research that there's no mobile home developments being built and campers and land clearing or holding tanks for the Haitians in our area. We know that nobody is eating cats and dogs in our area. There have been no reports of that. We also don't know specifically where they are working or how many. There are still a lot of unknowns. But those are the facts as we know them now at this date.
Yeah, I'd say those are the facts. And when you say where they are working, one thing that we do know, and again, I'll preface this before any of my answers, that because we don't know definitively how many people are here or how they got here, so we can't say 100% for certain for anything. And I think that's sometimes what people want are these black and white definitive answers. And we can't exactly give those. But what we do know is that most of our current Haitians that are here or anybody on the CHNV program are working through staffing agencies. So that could mean five go work here, five go work here. You know, they had a temp job. They're now laid off waiting for that call from the staffing agency to go back to work. So I think that we do know most are going through a staffing agency to get a job.
Okay, so let's break down what you just said there, the CHNV program, the Cuban, Haitian, Venezuelan, Nicaraguan program. What is it? Why does it exist?
Okay, so they're called, it's the Cuban, Haitian, Nicaraguan, Venezuelan parole program. Mm-hmm. So when you hear the word parole, sometimes that has a negative connotation. So don't think of it as a criminal parole. But what it is you are paroled into the country, meaning that some of the requirements are not the same that you have if you went through and got a green card or through another immigration process. And it was created, you know, back in the 90s, this parole program. And the real intention of it was, we'll just use Haiti as the example. I live in Haiti. My sister lives in Tampa. She needs a kidney transplant. Well, I'm a match. I can fly to Tampa, give her a kidney transplant. I'm paroled into the country because there is no known time that I will, you know, donate my kidney, my recovery, but you're coming for a humanitarian reason, a need. So we will parole you into the country and you won't have any of the typical immigration checks that you would normally have. But with this program, because of all the pressure that started coming on the southern border and all of the people, all of the immigrants, migrants hitting our points of entry, Homeland Security could not manage those numbers, the amounts. And so they expanded. They were like, oh, we've got this parole program. Let's expand it and make it into a refugee program. And so we are just going to assume, and they gradually added more countries in the past few years. And this all started in basically about 2021, really. It was an executive order done by President Biden to expand the parole program to allow it to be, in essence, a refugee program. And so instead of having them go through the asylum process, because that can take a while, it was, let's just create this loophole and it clears off our books because we're so backlogged in trying to process all these people. But they still have a process. It's not a, you just land, you're in, good. Like, you have to have a sponsor. I have a lot of questions about how and what sponsors do, but you still have to be vaccinated. You have to, you have to be vaccinated. You have to pay the processing fees. There are steps. You don't just walk in and become and get cleared through the CHNV program, but it is basically an expansion of a refugee program.
So to take this to the step of a Haitian that is here in our community, they didn't just go to an office and say, I want to come to America. Do you know the backstory there? I mean, these are sponsored by non-government organizations, yeah, NGOs.
Yeah, typically.
Typically. So how do they get here? What is the process in that?
Well, everybody everybody's story is unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every human being has a unique story on how you got from point A to point B.
Sure.
So we can't say all of them have the same story. They just happen to all be from the same country of Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they all came in one, you know, plane together. 80% of the Haitians that enter through the CHVN program enter through our point through airports. The main places being the Fort Lauderdale and Miami airport. So 80% actually come into this country by plane. And Florida is the main point of entry for Haitians into this country. So usually what the process is supposed to be is once you land where you your point of entry, your sponsor is supposed to meet you, help you, assist you with job placement, housing, and your medical needs. I think we're seeing a breakdown in that system, whereas, for instance, I'm quoting the New York Post here. The New York Post said that this program was put on halt for about 2 weeks and restarted. Part of it was because of the massive fraud that was found in the sponsor system, where one sponsor had 6,000 sponsorees. Obviously, you can't sponsor and support that many people. And there were 300 Haitians all registered to one warehouse in Orlando. Some of these NGOs, in my mind, are, as I always say, running a pyramid scheme. They just want more bodies so they can then say we've processed more and assisted for payment from the federal government. But they are supposed to, at their point of entry, get assistance with job placement. And that could then mean that you move somewhere else if that sponsor can assist you with a job in another area. But I think what we're seeing is a failure in that system. And then that Haitian, Nicaraguan, Venezuelan, or Cuban is just floating out into the system or into the world with no support that they were promised.
Okay, so you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that there could have been 300 people come at one time, and however many there are here in our area, which is, that number has varied, I think, in several different reports, are here because they technically didn't necessarily get what they needed when they got here. And somehow or another, they found their place here. But why or how?
I would say they're here based on the promise of job opportunities. That typically, I mean, I can't
from
say
their sponsor.
I don't know.
Or just the American dream.
I think it's a mix of the American dream, and I think it's a mix of I would say, yeah, it's that they have been cut loose really by their sponsor, and then individuals approach them with opportunities or the promise of an opportunity in return for their labor.
So when they're here, the Haitians that are in our community now, do they report back to their sponsor at any point in time? Are they tethered to them in any capacity, or are they typically here on their own accord now and they are fending for themselves now that they're here and they've gotten into this country through this loophole?
Well, from what I've found, most don't even know who their sponsor is. So even though they should be tethered in some form or fashion, they are not truly tethered, and they're not reporting back to anyone. They are left to their own accord, and really they have in a lot of cases been caught up in a more nefarious system where people are taking advantage of them and exploiting them for cheap labor.
So if we don't know if they were if they came here and they were promised work, or they had the expectation of work, and now they're here in our community and they don't have work, how in the world would we be able to find out where they are allegedly supposed to be working?
Well, because every human, I mean, you've got to feed yourself, so you have to work.
Yeah.
And they have all been processed and paid at some point through a staffing agency. Typically, the staffing agencies are running through temp jobs, so it might be they'll work for 2 weeks or a month and then be off, laid off, and then go back somewhere. But we would have their information through the staffing agency. And I think that the staffing agencies, not only do we need to look at this idea of where are the migrants? And I'm not saying that, that doesn't mean like, oh, we have to be scared or anything, but there's also with the state of Alabama, when we budget, if we see that there are hundreds and hundred Haitians in one area, 1,000 somewhere. Well, we need to shift our budgeting around to say that school system is going to need Creole speaking ELL teachers. So there's a practical need for our budgeting and how to appropriate resources across the state by knowing where individuals are.
So let's break that down for a second. You talk about temp agencies that are getting these people or allegedly helping these people get jobs. Has that been, have you or any of your colleagues in the state gone to any of these agencies already and looked into this?
Well, one thing that we don't have in the state legislature is we do not have subpoena power like the U.S. Congress does. So we could not have a hearing like, you know, the way you typically see where there's a congressional hearing and they're asking questions. I would like for us to have subpoena power, or at least like my committee, the Judiciary Committee, to have a subpoena power. Maybe not all need it, but I think that we do need to have this route of having hearings. But I do think that one problem that we have is that staffing agencies can pay a referral fee to someone that refers an employee to them. So if I am a human trafficker, for instance, I'm not saying that, I'm just saying if I'm a human trafficker, I'm not alleging that, I'm just saying, but if I'm a human trafficker, I would carry my people to the entity that will give me more money for trafficking people. So I think that we really need to look at banning all referrals and kickback fees for bringing bodies to a staffing agency, because you would be cutting off one of the revenue streams for a human trafficker.
But that's not to say that that is the only way that they're getting here or that they are able to find jobs.
No, I'm not saying that's the only way. I'm just saying simply that in terms of research that I've done, that there is, and this isn't just a Haitian problem or a Cuban problem, this is a problem in any kind of immigrant population. Because if you think about it, we're talking to some of the Haitians here, they had no idea you could even just walk and go get a job application. You know, they had to have someone help them. And so whenever you get a middleman in the system that's helping you, with air quotes, there can be a little bit of a ability to take advantage of that person. And that's any immigrant that doesn't know the cultures of the United States or speak the language, one person can exert influence that is a more nefarious, dangerous influence.
We're talking with District 33 State Representative Ben Robbins. Ben, what you recently sent a letter to Secretary Mayorkas of the Department of Homeland Security. As of this date, you have not heard back.
I have not heard back.
Senator Tuberville, Senator Britt have also made attempts, along with other colleagues of yours in the state legislature. Where do you see this going when it comes to a response from the federal government for you and the rest of the political leaders in our state hearing something, a heartbeat, a pulse from the federal government when it comes to these types of questions you have?
If Senator Tuberville and Senator Britt haven't heard anything, I'm not going to hear anything. I mean, in the totem pole, I'm way down there for Homeland Security to get back to. So I do find it concerning that our two U.S. senators cannot get a response. I mean, there's only 100 U.S. senators. We're not talking about you're getting inundated with calls. I mean, even if every one of them calls you, how long does it take you to really get back to 100 people? And most likely you're not getting inundated by every single U.S. senator. So the fact they can't respond to Senator Britt and Senator Tuberville is concerning. I don't know if we will never actually know all the questions that people have. And part of that is because of the breakdown of the system that I talked about earlier, where sponsors aren't doing all these services and saying, oh, John Doe just applied here, I helped him get this job, and you know, now he's living at this apartment. Because of that breakdown, and I said they've just been scattered like dust into the wind, how can you ever put it all back in the jar and say, oh, well, we know where everybody is. Once the system broke down, it's an impossibility. And so I think that you are not, they are not, they and me, we will never hear, because it would be too much of an embarrassment to say how much the system failed.
When it comes to the amount of Haitians that are here in the area, do we have an approximate number, a range that has been determined?
I mean, no, not necessarily. I mean, I know that there have been numbers given. I was told a number last night that was told to them by the city council, but I can tell you it is not, it is not hundreds like people say, but it's, I don't want to put an exact number, because I know if I do, then there'll probably be five more, and then, you know, you'll be,
it's going to be outdated by the time you say it.
Right.
Yeah. So the influx, though, that we have known about, is it a detriment to city, county, and state resources funded by taxpayer dollars?
I think that it depends. And I think that it depends, because every with that use of the term influx and across our state, I think that every, in the last few months, every corner of our state has had a different process. You know, they've come differently. So that's why it's so hard to say it's all this way. I think when you see like Marshall County, for instance, you saw, you know, I think a couple hundred just appear to work at Pilgrim's Pride, but through a staffing agency, not directly for them. That's the one link between every single thing, is they, no Haitian is a direct hire. They're all through staffing agencies. But you see that they're all currently directly and gainfully employed. And so that's a gain, that those factories, those plants are operating at full capacity. But then, because they came in the summer, that then all of a sudden you had all these new Creole speakers on the first day of school. And because you didn't have knowledge of that in the last school year, you had no ELL teacher for them. So then that's a drain that then for Marshall County's, you know, budgeting, how do we now shift our dollars around? And will we have those dollars to account for a brand new teacher and the capacity that we would need? So I think that it's a struggle, you know, because you're having to accommodate while also you are getting some, you can get some gain from an infusion of new people. But then it's all about how do you balance that? And that's a balancing act you have to do with budgeting, you know, every day.
The rumors that have spread online have in many cases been debunked because of some town halls that we had recently in Sylacauga and Fayetteville based on things that you have said, of course, doing your own research and working with some of our federal leaders, including Senator Tuberville and Senator Britt. Particularly when we see the circulation of talk on social media, where would you advise the facts to be concluded from rather than rumors? Where should people direct their questions and to whom?
Well, I think that if you would like, you can direct them to me and I will answer them to the best of my ability, or I will say I will talk to someone to find out. You can also direct your frustrations to me. I think that it's difficult because, as we talked about, whenever you cannot complete a story, you know, you can't say chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, the end, people want to fill in what chapter two means. You know, how did this happen? Well, I'll just assume this happened. This is how it happened. And then that assumption becomes reality because you hear the assumption enough. And then that does become a rumor and it just grows. So I think before you say, I heard this from a reliable source, because that reliable source of yours might have heard it as an assumption, might have heard, and you know, the telephone game. Well, I think this happened, and then the thing fell off, and next thing you know, it's a fact. So I think before you jump to this is fact, maybe you could ask me, ask one of your state senators, even approach your city council, any person that would then follow down that story and then say, well, I talked to so-and-so and this is the reality of the situation.
Where do you see this going as we move forward from here?
I think as long as we're in a presidential election, this will be a story, because Kamala Harris was labeled the border czar. So you're going to see attacks on her record and her record as the border czar. And Donald Trump has made the border a key component of his election. So therefore, you are going to see immigration on a macro level every day on the news. On the micro level of what we're living here on a daily level of Sylacauga is that I think we need to not let that macro conversation drill into us and make us become divisive. We do need to focus on they are here. Where are they working? What help might they need? And I do agree with people that have been saying, well, what about the homeless that are here? What about the veterans? Well, why don't we use this as a call to action to actually do something about all those issues and look at them, as opposed to just using that as a scapegoat to say, well, we shouldn't help this one group because of this other group. Maybe we should look at the big picture and say, all right, let's see where we want to be in 5 years. Do we want to clean up some of the derelict property that we have? Do we want to address these issues? And if so, let's actually have that conversation and not just yell and scream at each other and let our political discourse become toxic because we've allowed this vitriolic politics into our local conversations.
District 33 State Representative Ben Robbins, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for talking with me this morning and letting us know where everything stands. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.